Welcome to the Vibrant Living Network. Have you ever wondered what is possible beyond possible? What is the thing you've been wondering and inquiring about? Are you just feeling stuck and don't know why? Are you thinking or are you seeing? Seeing allows us to expand and have this other experience. We want to invite you for that wake-up call. We want to invite your spirit, your soul, so to be more alive, more connected. Glenn Brooks has been a life coach for over 33 years, author of Divorced to Patterns, Not Each Other, an explorer of what is possible. He has worked with people all around the world. Join us for a wake-up conversation, a dialogue with you. We will have some of the most interesting contributors. We will be talking to some of the most interesting people and have some of the most resourceful teachers, wisdom-filled people from around the world join us. Share your voice, ask the questions, become free of the known into a new world of possibility. We are going to talk about all the things you wonder about: how to live, how to heal, how to connect, how to love, how to be seen. Your life is precious. Enjoy it.
I was just feeling a sense of rhythm with that. It's too many words, okay. Though, I think. We got to cut the words a little bit. I am Glenn Brooks. Thank you. Welcome to Vibrant Living. I'm Glenn Brooks, along with beloved friend, appreciated family member.
Thank you.
Lisa LaRose.
Hello. Welcome. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. I just wanted to start with something, Lisa, because I felt if I got a rhythm with you, then we can introduce John Dago, who's written numerous books on what it means to wake up, right? What it means to wake up, what it means to live in this other experience. I call it the other experience because it seems like we get involved in this busyness of life and so much happening. And we lose touch with this quality called the remarkable, which I thought I want you guys to explore with me today, with myself and Lisa and soon John Dago, the author of many books, including East Meets West. He dedicated himself to this teaching, this experience. So I thought I would invite you guys into my grandparents' house in Forest Hills, New York. I thought I would start there, because I had to start someplace. I thought I'd just throw a dart there. So I go into my grandparents. I was very close to my grandfather in a very different way than my parents. I felt the quality of pleasantness. I felt something different, which is sort of how I want to enter this conversation with you guys. My grandmother, I never saw my grandmother stand up. She was diagnosed with a medical condition. She never stood up. I saw her barely stand up once. So, and my grandfather was an electrical engineer, and I felt this connection with him. But early on in my life, it seemed like what people were thinking about often and what they were focusing on, I just felt there was something missing. I don't know. I couldn't describe it. I couldn't describe how it was missing, but I felt it was missing. I felt something was missing. Something was vacant. And what was ahead of me was a certain script, a certain way that my mother told me to live and people around me. And yet I didn't notice they were particularly happy. But it seemed like they had an idea about how to live. They had an idea about this script. But I noticed certain people. It's funny, this is something I heard about when I guess I was a teenager. I heard about this man who was hit by I don't mean to depart from my grandfather's apartment, my grandmother's apartment. I was trying to give me a feeling of what it was like to kind of be in the world. I always had a wondering sense of something a little different, and I didn't really know how to put it into words, but I could see it, I could sense it. And I heard about this story. I'll just sort of, there's many stories that go to, but this one struck me early on. It was this man who was, he was hit by a helicopter propeller. It was a pretty tragic, devastating injury. But the surgeon that worked with him on, it was an emergency situation, but somehow he engaged this guy's remarkable mind. You know those moments when your remarkable mind is another aspect of you that's sort of beyond your words and beyond your usual and beyond, if you will, terminal normality. It's sort of like you in a different state where you see things clearer, you sense things, and you're awake in a different way. Well, this surgeon, when I read about the surgery, there was a relationship he had with the patient that was just remarkable. And I got really fascinated early on in my teens what this was. What is this other kind of thinking or awareness, what you call it, that's different than this dead thinking that seems to exist, that people live by, rehearse by, make relevant by? So this series with John Adago and Lisa LaRose and you is really an exploration into the experience of the remarkable, the ability to bring it in, the ability to have to find a language for it. That's to find a language for it, because sometimes we don't have a language for it. We have a sense of it, and there's moments, and I hope the series, I intend the series is one of them, where you can have a sense of home in this experience of the remarkable. And there'll be more stories. I wanted to turn it over to the Valentine's Day girl herself, Lisa LaRose. I just assigned you with that Valentine's Day girl. I'm not sure why, by the way. I just did that. I hope that fit well as a dress for you. Is that okay?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, great. So I just, since you've been inquiring, and you know, I know that you're someone that's been inquiring and kind of wondering and had this experience of the remarkable, and you have a listening for it. What would it like before we roll up the royal chair for John here? He might be dancing. I don't know. He comes to the table and shares his experience. What was the first moment of your life? I know this is a big question. Yeah, answer the remarkable. Do you remember a distinguishing moment, or always, or just recently when you were 2 and a half and your mom gave you the princess crown? Like, what was the moment where you sensed something maybe different, or you were curious, or you couldn't just go get it the next degree, you know, whatever it was, the degree, the next thing in the process? And someone tells you at some point later in your life it's going to be better. Or someone tells you something, and you know it's not true. You know it's mechanical.
That is an amazing question. And actually, when you ask me it, it takes me back to preschool. I was fortunate. I went to a school that was called the School for the Allied Arts. So we had drama and painting and French and all sorts of creative things. It wasn't a normal preschool, and it was in a museum. And so part of what we did on a weekly basis is we would be able to walk through the museum. And there were so many remarkable things with a history, with a story. And I think that really was my whole introduction into the remarkable, that there was beyond the confines of the world that we grew up in, there were cultures that were far beyond what we would even know as a child. So I was really very fortunate in that way, and it's part of the reason I'm so excited to have John Adago join us, because his books, you know, Where East Meets West, or Ancient Wisdom, and all of those things, and how they can really touch and how they have a relevance today. It's not so far off. The teachings, although they change the face of the words or whatever it is on surface appearance, really are timeless. And so I'm just like a kid in a candy store, just excited to explore the remarkable with both of you. So,
Oh, beautiful. No, that's beautiful. You told the story about a week ago from, I think it was East Meets West, or I'm sorry. It actually was from, meetings with Meetings with Miraculous Men or Miraculous People, the early Gurdjieff book.
Meetings with Remarkable Men. Yes.
Thank you. Let's warmly welcome John Adago. There you are, John. Oh, I didn't need to tell you where you're there, but you're there. So welcome.
I am here. Meetings with Remarkable Men was written by Gurdjieff, who was one of the primary when I began this last quarter. deeper and more profound understanding of what it is to live to the full potential of a man or a woman.
John, I'm concerned your voice is a little bumpy.
Okay.
Is there anything we could do to make your voice a little better, a little clearer?
Let's see what we can do here. I'll speak a little louder and clearer for a start. That might help.
Okay.
And
okay.
If not, if you're getting background noise, I'll move to another place.
Yeah, if you can move to another place, I just want to make sure when people hear your voice, they can just hear your voice.
Okay. But I'll continue to speak while I move. What he meant by remarkable, or he wrote about men and women who the aim and purpose of their life was they believed that there was esoteric knowledge, knowledge known by a few that was not generally available to men and women today. And they made expeditions to take places, to brotherhoods, to monasteries, in search of teachers, in search of ancient wisdom. And then after about 10 years of these expeditions, the Jesus came to the West and began to teach. And what he taught was a method and way of life by which men and women could deepen their understanding of themselves and the life they were leading. What I wrote about in Ancient Wisdom and in East Meets West was this esoteric knowledge, this sacred knowledge that has always been handed down from generation to generation. It's not generally available. ask me another question, Carlos.
I will. I'm going to answer your question.
Go ahead.
By the way, Lisa, how do you? Thank you. I'm going to turn it over to you. How are you hearing John, Lisa?
John, you do sound a little bumpy still. I don't know if you want to try to call back in. I hate to do that, but I don't want to miss anything that you have to share because it's so important.
I also want to say that Lisa. Yeah, if you could call back in and get to a stable location or a place
I'll call your affection.
All right, thank you. I want to say that Lisa just happened upon the word of the day. Lisa, you don't even know you happened upon the word of the day. You just did it.
Which was?
I'm going to pause. Well, you actually said bumpy. Bumpy is actually the Valentine's word of the day. And the way we define it here at Vibrant Living, bumpy is an experience of someone you feel extra alive with. So we want to send our love to all those people you feel bumpy and good about. So bumpy is a little bit of that, you know, that pulse, that feeling. Wow, that was like a New York City horn right in my ear there. That's what that was.
Maybe you're being transported through time.
Wow, that was amazing. John, you're like all these incredible props. I don't know where you got that prop. That Chris is going to want to buy that prop. That's incredibly good. Are you back, John?
That doesn't appear.
John, are you there?
Quite yet.
All right. I think he didn't hang up. Chris, is there any way we could hang up John's phone? Is there any way we can hang up John's phone? He's in a cat attack. I believe it.
I can hang up his phone.
Yeah, that'd be great. Chris sounded like kind of like the bad boy in class when I asked him that. I can take care of John's phone. I heard that.
He's offline.
Oh, okay. Because I was getting this like funny like horn sound in my headset.
Yeah, I could hear it too.
Oh, is there any way we could? Sorry, Lisa always declares herself innocent, which is a really good idea. So is there anything we could do? Is there any way we could turn that off?
I can't handle this background noise.
I'm on a clothesline. I'm wondering if there's anything else we could do. It's just noisy. What should we do, Chris? Anything with the background noise?
I can't do anything with the background noise. That's where you're, like,
I have no one around me. It's like no one's around me. And
it might have been him. You got someone else calling in.
Okay, cool. All right. We've got to find out about where John's able to make that kind of horn sound from.
Am I better?
You're better, John. Yes, you're better.
Good.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah. Well, Lisa just asked me if you're able to imitate a taxi horn from New York City.
I didn't get the question.
You can imitate the sound of a horn. It wasn't really a question. It was a comment that...
Right.
Yeah. Welcome back. Welcome back. Go ahead, John. Go ahead, Lisa. Welcome
ahead,
back.
Lisa.
You wanted a question. You wanted a question. Then we had all that. As Lisa came out with the Valentine's word of the day, which is bumpy, John.
Bumpy.
I thought bumpy would have the feeling of a sense of love. It's a little bumpy. It's a non-stabilized sense you feel about someone you love. So I hope that could pass today on Valentine's Day of the word of the day.
Well,
did that work, John?
Sure. One of the things that everybody celebrates Valentine's Day, but few people know how it arose or who Valentine was. Valentine was a priest who was loved and known because he counseled young people before they got married. That was his specialty. And what happened was he actually had a relationship, a friendship with the Emperor of Rome. And at a certain point, since he had this relationship, he attempted to convert him to Christianity. And the emperor did not at all appreciate the overture, and he executed it.
Mm.
So St. Valentine is a martyr. But his specialty was preparing young men and women for the sacrament of marriage. And that's how Valentine's Day arose.
Oh, nice.
Wow. I didn't have – Lisa, did you have a clue about this, or was I the only one in the room that didn't have a clue?
No, I had –
When my
I
whole thing
not.
Is I'm a matchmaker.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I knew it was St. Valentine, but I didn't have that background. It's wonderful. Wonderful. I think that it's a much needed service today.
I think
a lot of people don't really take to heart the sanctity of the union that they're getting ready to embark on. So, that's
well,
nice.
I know I have a question for you, and I want to say hello to Melissa, who's listening right now. I can feel it. Hello, Melissa.
Hello.
So, John, what was the moment I asked Lisa that question? You devoted over the last 40 years to writings that have to do with waking up, writings that have to do with having an awareness. So a lot of us said that we have this thing going on, like I'll call it dead thinking. We have something going on that doesn't feel alive and vital, and it allow us to see the way we sometimes do see. And so you studied and have written about how to make this a more conscious, how to become a participant, and if you will, an engager in this quality of awakeness, this quality of remarkableness. When did it start for you? When did John Gadago depart or noted? What happened in your life that taps you into the remarkable, John?
Well, I just got out of college, and I found I was vaguely uneasy. I was dissatisfied with my life. And I came across the teachings of the writings of Jeff and Uspensky. And what they said was that the ordinary state that we walk around in is our attention plays very much touch and go with our surroundings. So that while thinking
John,
about something,
John,
oh my
that, that music, the music we hear in the background is a cue for you to dance and be patient for one moment. We're just going to pause for a moment. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody. And stay with us for our awakening conversation. Stay with us one moment, John. John Hidalgo. East meets West.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com, M-E-T-T-A, mindfulnessmusic.com.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hello, you listen to the Vibrant Living Network. I'm Glenn Brooks, along with Lisa LaRose. A special series with John Adago. He's written several books on the awakening process, how to really wake up and take some of the ancient teachings, bring them to modern day. I asked John about the first moment he experienced or kind of was shaken into the remarkable, that kind of had his life move in a different action, a different direction. John, you were saying when you got out of college.
Yes, actually, what you begin to discover about yourself with just the beginnings of self-observation is that the quality of our attention is very much touch and go with what's going on in the moment. So that while involved in a conversation or in a project or reading something, we find that other thoughts and feelings distract our attention, and we kind of have to keep coming back to what matters, which is what's actually going on here and now. What the master teachers of mankind taught is that this dilemma, as it were, this attempt to increase the power of our attention, expand the radius of our awareness, is something that's been going on for as long as there have been men and women. So that the wisdom that the master philosophers and teachers passed on from generation to generation is as relevant today as it was when they first presented it. Because the essential nature of men and women have not changed, nor have the laws that govern the creation.
You know, how did it impact your conversations with people? How did it start to become part of your life? How did you start the inquiry? How did it move into this next level? It did become your life.
One begins to practice self-observation. And by that I mean that one begins to see what one is doing while it is happening. And I'm in the picture. That's generally not what's happening. Usually I'm aware of the people, of the behavior around me, but I'm not particularly cognizant of what I'm doing and saying. One finds that through the course of the day and the life, one's pulled by this desire and that desire. And often these desires take us in conflicting directions, and they don't necessarily lead us to something that we consider fulfillment or happiness. What the master teachers suggested was that these desires that arise all through the day and all through the life are really not of our own volition. They're habits that just tug us along. And at the end of the day, we might feel like we've been pulled down the street by a large dog on a leash. And that dog... And we have to learn.
Good job.
We have to learn to teach the dog to heal. We have to begin to consider what it is that I really want. What is it that I think will fulfill me? There's a Zen story about an archer, or it's just an analogy. When the Zen archer is about to shoot, first he sets his mind and his heart on the target. Then he pulls back the bow and loosens the arrow. Now, if his mind is on the target, if the arrow falls short, he draws the bow back further. If the arrow goes left, he shifts his aim to the right. With time and perseverance, success happens. But if we never have an aim, if we don't really know what it is that we want or what will fulfill us, well, then there's little chance of success. Ouspensky said, a man without a aim is like one wandering in the woods. His life tends to go in circles.
So in your life, John, have you found yourself pointing that arrow at certain things and where you had to bring your arrow in a little bit closer to the left or to the right?
I would say every day.
Every day.
But it begins by doing some serious contemplation about what I think will fulfill me now. And then perhaps I formulate a name for the week or for the season or for this year. And I want to refer to that aim from time to time to make sure that I'm walking toward what I believe will fulfill me. Now, generally what happens is we will accomplish that or gain what we seek will lead us to happiness, but it's not quite what we expected. It gets us closer, but that allows us to formulate another aim that perhaps more refined, more accurate. One of the things one does is he begins to seek out good company, the company of men and women and books and places and ways to spend one's time that lead us toward this higher aim of life.
Well, you know, as you're talking, it reminds me of a lot of Gurdjieff's journey. You know, I know he traveled a lot by train. That was very common in those days. So he would get on the train and he would travel to a certain location, and there would be interesting people that he would meet along his journey, either on the train or when he got off of the train. And I think today in today's society, it's sort of the same thing. We, you know, unfortunately, we don't have that luxury of unless you're in the city, you know, taking the subway, but you don't really have those long extended train rides like they did in his day. Were there any of the stories or the teachings that you came across that were along those lines? So he was, you know, traveling along on the train and really didn't have his aim set at one specific location, but things just unfolded in an unexpected way?
Actually, my understanding of Gurdjieff's life was he was a man with a remarkably strong will. And very early on in his life, he sensed that there was a higher potential for a man or a woman.
Okay.
And that he could develop himself in a particular way to reach his highest potential, that he would become a man or a woman of substance who could be of use to himself and to others. And from my readings of Gurdjieff and Ouspensky, and he never forgot his aim. He was always teaching. I mean, he spent 10 years on these expeditions in search of knowledge, and then he spent the rest of that knowledge, the rest of his life, attempting to bring this wisdom from the East and the Mideast, this ancient wisdom, to the West and plant it in the minds and hearts of people.
along the way, along your way, John, I was wondering, I wanted to ask you this, because along my way, I want to get Lisa's take on this. I had moments where things didn't make sense to me. They didn't make sense to me at all. Like, as an example, when I was approximately between 11 and 13, on some level, I couldn't understand if people loved each other, why they would divorce, why they'd break up. I remember just sort of being aware of things that didn't make sense to me, even if they were explained to me, even if the explanation didn't make any sense to me. In the same way that tense people explaining how to be relaxed doesn't make sense to me. So I was wondering, tell us what didn't make sense to you. Like, you know, you're very receptive, Gurdjieff. You're willing to let his whole world impact you and be moved. What, along the journey, what didn't make sense? What was, how did you deal with turbulence in the things that didn't make sense? Like, how did that unfold in your life?
Well, before I encountered this work and these ideas, when I thought about it, I realized that really not much of anything made sense. My relationships were not satisfactory. I wasn't particularly satisfied with the job I was doing. I found myself, you know, often speaking and acting in ways that were inappropriate to the situation, despite my best intentions. Mm-hmm. This was troublesome because there was something in me that was sure that I was capable of a more fulfilled life. And then I began to study the wisdom of the ancient teachers, and I'm talking about Socrates and among them, Socrates, Krishna, Buddha, and many others. And in essence, they taught the same message, that the aim and the purpose of our life was to become more of use to others. And that in doing so, we grew in a certain way. And as I began to understand this message, then it becomes the aim and purpose of my life. So where I go on vacation and where I go on a weekend, mm-hmm. the friends that I choose to associate with and spend time with, all of my relationships, I'm seeking that which furthers my aim. And mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. things and entertainments and people who are not pursuing the same interest that I am, well, that doesn't particularly help.
Go ahead, John. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say one of the things mm-hmm. to be realized that what these teachers taught, they were not teaching a way where a person goes off to a monastery or an ashram or to a hermitage and attempts to refine his thoughts and feelings and spiritual life isolated from the rest of the life. This is called, what these teachers taught is called the fourth way, that we attempt to practice these spiritual practices of meditation and contemplation and study and observation while carrying out a full life, family, profession, and our relationship to the community.
That's wonderful. You know, John, it's one of the things I find so delightful about you is that not only do you have written these books that adults can capture, you've also embarked on the journey to become a storyteller of children and to embark on sharing this wisdom and really helping the young cultivate these ideas at a young age. What inspired you was it grandchildren that came into your life or your own children
it was the grandchildren actually. The grandchildren became of age in 6, 7, 8 when they began to, there's reason functioning. there are things you want to read them. There are things you want to tell them. And when you look, go into the bookstore and you see books like, you know, Harold and the Purple Crayon, that really doesn't meet the needs.
By the way, you can go to John's list called Do Not Read These Books to Your Children.com.
They're okay. There's nothing wrong with them, but they're not really feeding them anything essential. So I began to make up stories, which I told to my grandchildren, and eventually evolved a collection, which I hope to have in print by the spring, and it's called A Grandparent's Tales.
Oh, beautiful. That's beautiful.
That is beautiful.
Yeah, and so as you were telling these tales, I would imagine that your grandchildren got really wide-eyed and inquiry and were very curious to learn more, which again created the next tale, I'm sure. What was your one of your favorite questions or inquiries from one of your grandchildren?
Children
tales?
Are children, you know. So if they laughed and they enjoyed it, and you know, at times I remember one story ending in such a way, and my grandson said, "Really, Dad? Grandpa, really?"
He
heard it. He got it. Right? Now, but he's eight, and at eight, we're not going to have a philosophical discussion. The art of the storyteller with the children is to put principles and wisdom in a form that's digestible to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have any world experience yet. But they get it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah, and I'd love to be on the playground of your 8-year-old and hear what they have to share with their friends.
Please, there'll be a public service announcement of not reading any of the books by Hal's Crayoning. Don't read those books. Stay with us for more Vibrant Living with John's important message about this is beautiful. Life can be beautiful when we wake up together. You're listening to the Vibrant Living Network. Stay with us for more. Hello, Melissa.
Feed your soul with Waves of Consciousness on OM Times Radio.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to OM Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos, A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
Melissa from Michigan. I work an extra part-time job serving lunch at my child's school, but I still can't afford to put food on our table.
Daniel from California. Choosing whether to pay the rent or pay to fix the car to get to work doesn't leave us with much at all. Now we can't even pay for meals.
Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Oh, I'm Paul Adrino. That's quite a voice that guy has. Amazing. You're listening to Vibrant Living Network, Vibrant Living. And Brooks, happy Valentine's Day. John Adagos with us today, author. He's much more than an author. He's a liver. He's an explorer of wisdom. How to bring this in these little ropes. You know, when I was sort of got interested in this type of reading, Lisa and John, I picked up a book very early on called The Silver Bird. The Silver Bird. And it was all about this little girl who could see things and sense things, but all the adults couldn't see or sense things. And they kept telling her she didn't see anything. So the colors that she saw, she just experienced she experienced the invisible. And when she reported about it, they told her not to pay attention to it. And somehow that book really connected to me. I really, you know, the more that the world, you know, Rudolf Steiner, one of the people you write about, Steiner developed a whole type of education called Waldorf education. And he wanted children to enter the world with wood and wool. He wanted to touch fibers that would connect them, in a sense, assist them in their soul waking up. It's a very unique thing, a unique, profound contribution. And to this day, some of the Waldorf schools don't allow children to use the computer because they feel like the computer's cold, has cold energy, and it's very different than the warmth and fiber and very, and it's interesting because there's a lot of people, I think, in the modern world that you know, the wonder of the storytelling, as you were sharing about with your grandchildren. It's a beautiful passage to be able to stroll through the woods and hear a story from a grandparent, from a relative, from a loved one. How did religion – hey, Lisa, what happened – I want to ask Lisa, what about religion? Did religion turn you on early on or turn you off? What was your relationship to religion as we have this conversation?
We moved a lot, so I was never ingrained in too many, you know, any beliefs. I was, you know, very connected to the first people in Canada. I went to, you know, their summer camps. I just, it wasn't, you know, I considered myself very spiritual. I was never religious, so I wasn't indoctrinated in anything. And I remember when I first started reading the Kabbalah, and I had a friend of mine that is Jewish. She told me I wasn't allowed to read that. I was like, oh, really? I didn't know.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine something being forbidden to
wow.
explore.
Right.
But I read it anyway. So.
Yeah. And Lisa's new book is called Books You Should Read Anyway.
Yeah.
Book you exactly. should read anyway.
Yeah, but no, you know, one of the things that, and I, you know, have really enjoyed my re-exploration of meetings with remarkable men, you know, one of the things that I found so fascinating is, you know, along the stops along the way, one of the places that Gurdjieff had stopped, he, you know, was... I think it goes in alignment with what you were talking about, Glenn, that sometimes we have these circumstances that present themselves to us. And it always seemed like he was really creative. And I'd love your insights on this, John, is he was in need of some funds. And so while he was on the train, he set up a plan of action and he drew up an advertisement that said, "The Universal Traveling Workshop in its passage will stop here for a very short time." And all of the different things, he said, you know, hurry and give your orders, bring everything you have to be repaired or remodeled. We repair sewing machines, locks, upholstery, recover umbrellas, children's toys, remove stains, restore pictures. You know, really that there was nothing that he wouldn't offer as a service. And I'm curious as to what your insights are on that story, John, and you know, how you felt that it served him along the way in touching and reaching people in their lives.
Well, what Gurdjieff wrote was that a good occupation for a man or a woman was one that allowed him to develop as many aspects of himself as possible. We live today in the world of a time of specialization. And specialization results in efficiency and the production of wealth. But it doesn't necessarily develop a man in full. So although we may specialize to earn a living, we don't want to limit ourselves. I mean, you know, I met once a doctor who he was a neurosurgeon and quite accomplished in his field. But in speaking with him, he had no deeper understanding of the meaning of life than a layman, because it wasn't necessary for him to perform his job and profession. But it is necessary to fulfill the purpose and meaning of your life. And the way we actually go about this is it arises from a desire to be of use to the people that we love and care for. And it starts with our family and our loved ones, and then perhaps the people we meet in our professional life. But it needs to grow in a more universal direction.
That's very beautiful. So, I
want to say, Lisa, that was better than any guidance counselor, anybody thing ever said it. That was absolutely brilliant, John. I realized that turned me on. That, and you know what? How I work with people now with Vibrant Speaking and my coaching is, I meet many, many people who are so dissatisfied and miss this ability to fully express themselves as a dancer, as a speaker, as an actor. I realize that a lot of us get a job and kind of get a death sentence. And what you just said is so alive and versatile. Loved it.
Well, and
it changed your doorway, your aim.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, it changes your perspective. Because the perspective we walk around in through our day is that we consider ourselves the central figure in the play, that we understand that there's a very large creation, universe, as it were, but somehow we think that I'm the center of it, that it all revolves around me.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, there is a survival impulse. I mean, we have to take care of ourselves. We have to keep body and soul together. But that principle grows way out of proportion. And our whole world becomes this self-centered view. Expanding the view is one of the keys to finding happiness and fulfillment. We have to learn how to practice love. And that's not meant in a sentimental way. By love is that I begin to relate to the people around me so as to nurture and care for their finest and highest qualities and natures.
Feels beautiful. I think that if everybody did just that and found a few people to practice love with, it would definitely change the world. By that definition, absolutely. To bring out the fine. Could you repeat that, John? You said to bring out the fine.
To relate to others so that we nurture and care for their finest and highest qualities in nature.
Wow. It's very beautiful. So Glenn, if today you had an opportunity to do just that, who would you choose to reach out to and what would you offer them?
It's a beautiful question. Why would I, you know, my what comes to mind immediately is my son Michael Brooks. I learned so much from Michael. Michael shows me new worlds, and he's become so global and he sees so much. So I would just say connecting the heart, the next level of deepening this new relationship, because, you know, you have a new relationship with your children. They become adults and they become a different aspect of your family. Same thing with my daughter. And I would say the people that in some ways, and I want to get into this next week, that sometimes the people that give us the most challenge also, I think, give us the greatest opportunity to experience love in a different way, the same way that John was saying, kind of. So I would say my children to some other people, you know, listening, and I mentioned my grandparents, I think to myself, Lisa and John, it would be like, wow, I just feel like I began this life with my grandparents, and when they passed away, I feel like I'm still learning things from that. I'm still appreciating things about my mother that I didn't even realize that she expressed. So it's a very humbling question. It's a very humbling question, and it's I guess another thing is to slow down to experience those passages of love in the day. You know, those moments where we take a moment, maybe someone drops something, those little moments where it matters so profoundly, and we could be apt to hurry through it.
Mm-hmm.
And softening. I mean, I think living life with soft eyes and the ability to feel a touch when you're touched. Right? To be in that experience. And that's what I guess Gurdjieff's teaching to me, and as John shares it, and as you so beautifully catch essences of meaning, it's kind of be in life when you're in life and become more awake to the intelligence that's in you, that sings through you. And don't get, there's only two, in my life, there's only two songs. And one song is kind of like this counterfeit thing. And this other thing that's like this pulsating thing. And so when you're in relationship, God, it's such a doorway, because it's, you know, as John was saying about being, it's very easy to be just focused on ourselves. To be in relationship is to sing the full song of life together. That's what I'm being humbled and asked to pay attention to and to coach about. And then people come to me, it's like, it's amazing, because I'm so honored they would trust and open that part of themselves and be humble enough to say they want to have this other life. I mean, that's why I love what John's doing and you're doing. It's just to be able to be in life that invites people to step into life and be in life in a way that's truly alive. Vibrant.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, John, I guess, you know, you having said that, I would direct the same question to you. You know, some examples of just simple things that you could share with the audience and something that they could do in their day on this very special Valentine's Day to share a little piece of their heart.
Well, I would say that begin by taking a little bit of time every day for yourself. That there should be a short period, 15 minutes or a half an hour, sometime during the 24 hours that I come to myself. Let the activities and the responsibilities of the day subside, and there's some contemplation, perhaps meditation, studying something that's inspirational. Something that puts us in touch with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very practical, because it's from the stillness of myself that the creative energy of the day arises. And without this coming in touch with oneself, one finds oneself just running about randomly. There's a lot of action and a lot of motion, but nothing much of substance transpires. So that's one practical thing that one can do. And then this method of observation, which means simply that there's a faculty that awakens in the mind and heart that just observes what's going on right now. And I'm in the picture. My behavior, my thoughts, the tone of my voice, I'm cognizant of that as I relate to the creation. Because under the light of observation, the behavior and the speech refine. They become more appropriate to the situation.
That's beautiful. I think that so many times we don't we don't take that time for self, and that's a beautiful practical way to embody that and really touch in into that self-love and nurturing. And
yes.
So many of us, we hurry so much. Mm. And
yes.
Oh. So one first step is we want to deepen our awareness and sense of oneself. But the next step is to realize that we have to acknowledge that self in everyone we meet. That in fact, this force of life that makes my heart beat, this consciousness, this is the same force that animates you and everyone else. And it's this universal self that needs to be remembered and acknowledged as often as possible during the day in the life.
John Adago, thank you deeply. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, everyone. Your life's precious. Enjoy it. Happy Valentine's Day. Thanks for listening, Melissa. Appreciate
be
you
well,
all very deeply.
Thank
be well.
You.
Be well.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, John. Much love.
Bye-bye.
The Vibrant Living Network, as it expands, I'm so happy you're with us. Go look at, check us out on Facebook. I'm Glenn Brooks, along with Lisa LaRose. Life's precious. Enjoy. One more time for being Lisa. Life is precious. Enjoy. Thank you. Thank you, Chris.